Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is Perek Chaf Aleph of Melachim Aleph, the 21st chapter of the Book of Kings, the second to last chapter of this, what's called Melachim Aleph, the first Book of Kings. This Perek opens up with Vayihi Achar HaDivarim Ha'ile, Kerem Haya LeNavot HaYisrael Asher BeYisrael, Eitzel Heichal Achav Melech Shomron. There was a vineyard. This guy has a vineyard, this unfortunate man, as we will see, Navot of Yisrael, has a vineyard in Yisrael, and it's near the palace of Achav, the king of Shomron. So, Vaydaber Achav el Navot lemor, Tnali et karmechav, hili legan yarak, kihu karov, etzel beiti, ve'nelecha tachtav, kerem tov mimenu, im tov meinecha, nelecha kesef, mechir zeh. So, Achav says to him, you've got this nice, this nice kerem. I want it to be a gan yarak for me. I want it to be a garden where I can stroll and I can enjoy, and I can have a, you know, like an adjunct to my palace. And I will replace it. I will replace it with a garden of similar value, or I will pay you money for it, or perhaps both. It's not. Achav is not trying to be a drive a hard bargain here. He's trying to get the kerem from Navot. So this is, just as we watch it, a prime example of the Doraita prohibition in what we call the Ten Commandments in the Decalogue, a prime example of the prohibition of Lo Tachmor. Achav wants something, right? He wants something that somebody else has, and he wants, and he comes to approach the guy to try to pressure him into selling it. We're going to see the implications of that Lo Tachmod violation, but the violation is already his allowing himself to desire it, and desire to the point that he approaches the guy to try to pressure him into selling it. So Navot says, and this is a topic that is no longer one we fully understand in our society, but Navot says, I can't sell it to you, chalila li mihashem, meaning it would be wrong towards God if I sold it to you, from giving up the nachala of my avot, my inheritance, my forefather's property. That sense is worth paying attention to. That sense of when you have a piece of land, you work it not only because you happen to be a farmer and it happens to be what came to you, but that you are continuing and fulfilling your family tradition by taking over the land from them. It's like, you know, there used to be stores that were passed down from generation, or businesses that were passed down from generation, and the future generations took pride in being the ones to continue the family tradition. And that's what Navot's claim is. His claim isn't, it's not enough money, or I happen to like it. It's a family tradition that I'm upholding here, and therefore I cannot sell it to you. Vayavo Achav el Beito, Sar v'Zaif. So we've seen Achav Sar v'Zaif before. One could wonder whether this was just an attribute of Achav's personality, that he tended to get frustrated, and when he got frustrated, he got angry and upset. So now he's angry and upset all davar asher dibrei alav Navot Yisraeli, that Navot is not willing to sell him the kerem. Vayomer lo etein lecha nachalat avotai. Vayishkav al mitato, so he lies down in bed, vayaseh bepanav velo achal lachem. And he goes into his bed, and he turns towards the wall, and he's unwilling to eat. So he gets, I think we today would call it depressed. And he is prone to depression. He gets upset and frustrated, and that upset and frustration leads him to depression. So his wife Izevel comes to him. Why are you so upset? What's with your mood? And you're not eating. She says, I spoke to Navot. And the thing to realize is that from Achav's perspective, he's being so reasonable. I spoke to Navot, and I said, I want to buy your kerem, and I'm willing to pay you. Right? Or if not, I'm willing to substitute another kerem for it. And he says, no, I won't do it. You know, as I'm talking, I'm reminded of a scene in, I think, The Godfather, in some movie. Bugsy Siegel. There's some movie where one of these gangster types or mobster types wants something, and he comes in and he offers to pay lots and lots of money for it. And so sometimes people just say yes, and sometimes people say no, and the people who say no are then threatened and are then made to recognize that they want. But part of the point to realize is that the people who are doing it do not think that they're stealing. They think that they're coming in and they're offering a valid price. And if they offer you a valid price for whatever it is that they decided they wanted, it's your responsibility to sell it to them. And then they have the right to take it by other means if that's not going to happen. And that is exactly the prohibition of Lo Tachmod. And you notice that because in his answer to, in Ahab's answer to Izebel, it is not even registered with him, with Ahab that is, it's not even registered with him that Navot's answer was not the answer that Ahab gives. Navot's answer was, I can't sell it to you because it is my forefather's plot of land, and therefore it would be wrong, it would be inappropriate of me to sell it to you. And Ahab doesn't even hear that. He just hears, Lo Eten Lachad Karmi, I will not give you my kerem. So really, are you the king of Israel? So there's lots of ways you read. Either you will now be. Ata is one is you, and the other one is ata is now. So it's either you will now be, and she's telling him, I'll take care of it, or she's a little bit of mocking him. She's saying, oh really, are you really the king? She says, Kumu achol lechem, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. Yitav libecha, be happy. Ani yaten lechad kerem Navot Yisraeli. I am going to get you the kerem of Navot Yisraeli. Now, sort of along the way, as we've been learning these Prakim and Melachim, we've been noticing some of the aspects of Ahav and Izebel. We've noticed Ahav sort of on the line between being evil and not evil, even though the Psukim blame him for everything. We've noticed that he does seem to have some good attributes, and that's a part of the picture of Ahav that we have had to pay attention to. And we've noticed that Izebel is much more forceful than Ahav in terms of her addiction to or connection to evil. So she was the one who threatened Eliyahu right after he had killed all the Nevi'i HaBaal. She was the one on whom that made almost no impact. And she also now is the one who's going to take decisive action here in terms of getting the kerem for Ahab. So this is what she does. V'tichtov sifarim b'shem Ahab. She writes in the king, in the name of the king. In other words, she's functioning as the king, so she writes in his name. She v'tachtom b'chotamo, she uses his seal. V'tishlach sifarim al hazakinim v'al hachorim asher b'iro. She sends letters or books or writings to the elders and the leaders of the town and the officers of the town of Navot's town, b'hayoshvim et Navot, who live with Navot. Look at her plan. V'tichtov b'sifarim lemor. She says, call a fast day and put Navot at the head of the people. Make sure he's there and showing up for the fast day. So a fast day in Judaism is when you have a time of trouble and a time of distress. And it's worth watching Izebel completely corrupt the fast day ethic and the fast day, what's supposed to happen in the fast day. Because she says, call a fast day and put Navot at the head of the people, and then what's going to happen? The Hoshivu Shnaim Anashim Bnei Belial Negdo V'iduhu Leimor Beirachta Elohim Vamelech Votzius Goluhu V'yamo. Says, get two witnesses to come and testify against him that you cursed God and the king. So cursing God is an absolute violation of the Torah that is punishable by death, and cursing the king had the right to put you to death because it's seditious speech, as it were, and therefore the king has the right to put you to death and take him out and stone him to death. Vayasu in she'iro hazakinim v'achorim asher hayoshvim bi'iro ka'asher shalcha alehem Izebel. So they listen to her. They follow her directions. Ka'asher katub basefarim asher shalcha alehem, exactly as she sent them in these books. So the Radak points out that it's an odd sort of interaction, and the Radak wonders about it, meaning if the leaders are willing to just kill Navot, or willing to trump charges against Navot and then lead to him being killed, why don't they just kill him outright? Why don't they just send him saying, I don't like Navot, kill Navot? So he suggests that, and I think it's two different suggestions, although you could say that it's one, but one suggestion he makes is that we've seen before that there were good people left among the Jewish people. There were the 7,000 souls who still didn't bow down to Baal and people like that. So he suggests that there's a disconnect between the leadership and the regular people. And that while the regular people might fall for this subterfuge and then let Nevot be killed, they would not simply kill Nevot on Izebel's say-so. And therefore, they had to come up with some way to make it legitimate in the eyes of the people. The other possibility is that even if the people were evil, they just weren't evil enough to be willing to just blatantly kill somebody who's innocent, because that will eventually turn on them as well. But they are willing to fake it out and go through some kind of procedure, and in that way, try to get Nevot killed. So that's what they do. Karutzom, Vehoshivu et Nevot Birosh Ha'am. They call for the fast day, and they put Nevot at the head of the people. Vayavou Shnei Anashim Vnei Belial Vayeshvu Negda. When they sit opposite him, Vayiduhu Ansheha Belial et Nevot Neged Ha'am Lemor. Beirach Nevot Elokim Vamelech. Vayotziuhu Michutz La'ir. Vayeskelu Bavanim Vayamot. And that's what they do. And they kill him. Vayishlukul Izevel Lemor Sekot. Sukal Navot Vayamot. And they say, Navot has been stoned and killed. So, Vahikishmo, Izebel, Ki Sukal Navot Vayamot, Vatomri Izebel Alacham, Kum, Reish et Kerem Navota Yisraeli, Asher Me'ein Latet Lecha, Bekethef, Ki Navot Chai, Ki Mate. So, the Pasuk that above is the Pasuk that bothered Chazal. Izebel comes to Achav and she says, so now get up and take over Navot's field, because he's no longer alive, because he's been killed. So Chazal wonder, why, if he's been killed, does that necessarily mean that Achav gets it? And they offer two options. And the two options color our picture of Achav. One option is that if you're killed by virtue of a crime you committed against the kingdom, right? Those who are Harugei Beitin, who are killed by Beitin, or Harugei HaMalkut, who are killed by the Malkut for cause, that all of their property becomes forfeit as part of the death penalty that is administered to them. So that's one possibility. So if that, in that possibility, it does become true that this would answer the Rodak's question in a slightly different way. It could be that Izebel had to do this because if Achav just killed him for no reason, then he doesn't get the property. But by virtue of killing him as for having cursed Hashem and the king, so then it's a justified killing by the king. And a justified killing not only brings with it the death, but also brings with it the property rights. The other possibility, which I think is slightly more chilling, is that it suggested that Nevot was a cousin of Achav's. Nevot was Achav's uncle's son, and that Achav made sure there were no other living relatives, and therefore he was the next closest relative after that, and therefore he becomes the one who can kill it, who can take over the field. All of it which shows, although you might say that Achav is exceptional, all of it shows, though, part of what the Torah meant by the issues of Lotachmot. If we allow ourselves to covet, to want what other people have, and we just let those feelings fester, so in most of us, it still will just be feelings of, oh, I wish I could have that. But in some people at the edges of, perhaps, of what we call today mental illness, of depression, of this, of that, the urge to find a way out of those bad feelings can lead to extremely negative results, as they did over here. And look what Achav says, Vahikishma Achav kimet Navot, Vayakom Achav laredet el kerem Navot Yisraeli lirishtel. So this is part of Achav's persona that we need to pay attention to. Right? If I wanted something desperately, and I really wanted it badly, and I'm upset about it, and then I find out that somebody else causes the death of the person from who I wanted it, it takes a certain kind of a person to be willing to just be happy about that, and not horrified about it, right? Imagine that you express a wish to somebody, and some crazed friend of yours assumes that means no matter what, and they go off and they kill somebody to get you what you wanted. I think most of us, I hope most of us, would be horrified to find it out. So when we see Achav, his reaction, that he just hears it, and he gets up, and he goes to Kerem Navot to take it over, so then you see that he may not have been the murderer, but he's certainly not objecting to the morality of it, and he's not deeply moral about this issue. Pasuk Yedzayin, Vahid Dvar Hashem El Eliyahu Tishbi Lemor. So now, as this is going on, Hashem speaks to Eliyahu, and he says, Kum rei likrat Achav melech Yisrael, asher b'shamron, hinei v'kerem navot asherat sham l'rishto. Hashem says, go to Achav, the king of Israel in Shamron, of the northern kingdom. He is at the kerem of the vineyard of Navot, and he went there to take it over. V'dibarta elav lemor, and you need to go to him and say, Ko amar Hashem haratzachta gam v'gam yarashta. Did you kill and also take over or inherit the field? V'dibarta elav lemor, Ko amar Hashem, b'mkom asher
Lakeku hakelavim et dam navot yilku or yaloku yaloku hakelavim et dam chagamata. Where navot's blood was licked by the dogs, your blood will be licked by the dogs instead. So that's what Hashem says to Eliyahu to tell Ahab. Notice that in Hashem's calculus, and this is Hashem talking, so Hashem has the right to make his calculus his own way, the words to Ahab are haratzachta gam yarashta. Did you kill and also take over? When, of course, if you look at it from Ahab's perspective, he could have room to say, I didn't kill. Right? I didn't kill. I didn't suggest to Yizevel that she kill him. I didn't suggest to Yizevel that she set it up so that he'd be, I didn't do any of that. So I'm innocent of this. And I believe that what Hashem is saying to him is that by virtue of the Yarashta, you're part of the Ratzachta. Another example of Ahab's two-sidedness. In this case, he says, have you found me, my enemy? He says, yeah, I've come to find you because you have sold yourself to do what's wrong in the eyes of Hashem. Like we've seen before with other kingdoms, other kingships in the northern kingdom, once again Hashem comes, sends a Navi to tell him that the evil is going to come to him, he's going to be wiped out and cut off, and there will be no survivors, no Mashtid Bekir, no Atzur, no Azub, all of that. Like happened to Yeravam, and like happened to Basha, the son of Achia, for all the anger that you've aroused, meaning in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all of the things you've done wrong towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and leading the Jewish people astray into sin. So just if you think about the history of the Northern Kingdom, you had the house of Yeravam and Nevat, got wiped out. The house of Basha got wiped out, and now the house of Ahab, which is really the next dynasty, is going to get wiped out. Dogs will eat Yizevel. In the other case, it was Hashem's not going to leave survivors, and the dogs will lick the blood. But here, the dogs are going to actually eat Yizevel's body, is the prediction. Bechel Yisrael. If it happens in the city, the dogs will eat them. As we've seen before. And now the pasuk sort of sums him up, even though he's not dead yet. And this is the complications of his dynasty, of his kingship. There was no one like, none evil like Ahab, who sold himself and set himself up to do the evil and what was wrong in the eyes of Hashem, and who was led into it by his wife Yizevel. And that's the, I don't know if it's a tragedy, but that's the problem of Ahab. He's not himself a fully evil person. He's not himself fully evil, but he marries somebody, and then he gives in to her, and then he doesn't fight her, he doesn't argue with her, he doesn't stop her, he lets her have her way. And he did terrible abominations to follow the wrong ways of doing things. In the ways of the Amorites that Hashem had made sure to conquer and to be removed before the Jewish people. Meaning, this is already harkening all the way back to Yitzhak Mitzrayim. When we're on the verge as a people of entering Eretz Israel, the things that Hashem stresses over and over again are that we need to rid the country of the Amori, of the seven nations. So nowadays people would like to focus on the question of the morality of killing them all. So however we would have gotten rid of them, leave that question aside, even if we just chased them out or converted them so that they abandoned their ways completely, whether that's by converting to Judaism or whether that's accepting the Shemitzel Pnei Noach wholeheartedly and fully, either way, it is not this. It is not kicking up these ways. And here Ahab, instead of doing that, is taking on the ways of the Amorites. And that's what the pasuk is blaming him for. So when Ahab hears this, now remember, this is the Ahab when he first saw Eliyahu, was happy to say, not happy, but he's willing to say, is that you, Oyevi, my enemy? And we're going to see in the next parak that Ahab is going to talk about Michayu and Yimla and say, see, they never speak good about me. He's very bitter about it. And when Eliyahu complained to Ahab after Ahab let Ben Hadad go, and Eliyahu complains to, tells him about it, and says that's a problem. So again, he was sar v'zayif, he was very upset. So this is the back and forth of Ahab. Vahi kishmo Ahab ad-dvarim ha'ileh, Vayikra begadav. He hears this, and he tears his clothing. Vayasim sak al bisoro vayatzom. And he puts sackcloth on his flesh, and he fasts. Vayishkav basak, and he sleeps in the sackcloth. Vayalech at, and he goes slowly. Going slowly is a sign of not feeling good and comfortable about yourself, and not feeling in charge of everything. So Achav reacts to the announcement of punishment, and he's upset about it, and he changes somewhat. And it seems to be sincere, because the psukim close with the parak by saying, "Vahidvar Hashem, Eliyahu tishbi le'mor." Hashem speaks to Eliyahu, saying, "Haraita ki nichna Achav milafanai." Have you seen that Achav is now sort of surrendered before me? Is downtrodden? Is nichna submits to me? Yan ki nichna milafanai. Since he has submitted to me, lo avi ara abi yamav. I will not bring the evil in his time. Bimei beno avi ara al beito. It's in the time of his son that I will bring the evil on his family. So Achav wins a reprieve of sorts. And Chazal talk about the fact, Chazal had some tradition that said that Achav was half good and half evil, and they couldn't understand that because the Pesukim say he's all evil. So Chazal say, no, the truth is he was a vatran b'mamono. He was somebody who was loose, was generous, is probably the better word, generous with his money, and he used to support Talmidei Chachamim. He would support those who studied Torah. And therefore, the tradition treated it as if he got kapara, got atonement for half of his sins. So that, I think, that Chazal, regardless of the historicity of the exact numbers or what he actually did with his money, that Chazal captures the contradictions of Achav that the Pesukim here highlight. He hears Eliyahu's nevuah, he believes the nevuah, he accepts the nevuah, and he, after a fashion, repents. And by repenting in that way, he wins himself some kind of a reprieve from Hashem's judgment against him, in that the Ra'ah is not going to come into his time. Now, it's apparently too late because that's as far as it goes, but one wonders, or at least I wonder what would have happened if Achav had continued in that way, or had strengthened himself in that way. Next part we're going to see that it doesn't last. As much of Achav's good qualities do not last, it doesn't last here either. And we're going to see that Achav is going to stubbornly go to his death despite the prophecy of Michayah ben Yimlah. So it's not like this turnaround has the lasting power that could have changed everything, but it leaves us wondering what would have happened if. And that's the story of Achav. In tomorrow's parak, we'll finish off the story, we'll see his death, and we'll see all that happens to him. But what we see in this parak captures very, very well the problem of Achav. And the point to notice is Achav described as the most evil king of all of them, because he brings in Gilulim, and he brings in all forms of idol worship in a way that others had not done, and he follows his wife's advice, and he does this. And the point to watch is he's the most evil in the ways, and the pasuk describes him that way, and yet much of what he did was be weak and irresolute in his devotion to Hashem. He was also devoted to idols, and even that, it's not that he's so devoted to idols, it's that he allows his wife to be so devoted to idols. He's also devoted, and then he allows his wife to be devoted. He wants a kerem, she arranges the murder, and then he takes over the kerem. It is the acquiescence to evil that's much more a quality of Achav's than the actual evils that we see, and yet the acquiescence to evil earns him the name and the sobriquet, I think the right word would be, of the most evil king in the history of Malchut Yisrael, at least up until this point. So these are important lessons about Achav that we see in this parak and in this story of Navot Yisraeli. Often the story is cast as in Achav just taking the privileges of kingship too far and killing him, and I think the lessons are much deeper than that, and especially when we see that he does some kind of tshuva, so we see a weak personality, and how evil one can be, even though they sincerely sort of accept the truth of prophecy, they accept the truth of Eliyahu's prophecy, but he's not strong enough to say, well, that's the only truth that I have to worry about, and that's all that I focus on. He also gives into Isabel, he also this, he also that, and that is the story of Achav, which we will finish off in tomorrow's parak with him dying, along the very similar lines, betraying to the end this kind of character that we've seen today. Have a great day.